Hey, this is James Arnold Taylor, voice actor, the voice of
Yabba-dabba-doo, Fred Flintstone,
Johnny Test, who's 11 years old and totally awesome,
Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank, Tidus from Final Fantasy X, oh yes, and of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It wouldn't be coffee with Kenobi without yours truly. The Force is strong here indeed.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi...
And there's definitely a lot we could say about them. I know you've got plenty of stories about Jake Lloyd for sure.
Yeah, no, Jake.
Jake, once got into a drunken argument about the prequels.
Which is, you know, how great is that, really?
This is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
If you've ever heard Brian Young talk about that story on Full of Sith about his conversation with Jake Lloyd, it is definitely something you are not going to forget. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Coffee with Kenobi, show number 148, your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, rhetoric, and the best travel tips this side of the galaxy. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking One Nation Coffee out of my Galactic Knights coffee mug from 2017. Coffee with Kenobi is brought to you today by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. For all of your travel needs to the Disney theme parks and cruise lines, as well as anywhere you want to go on vacation, be sure to go to www.mousefantravel.com, the travel agency of Coffee with Kenobi. On CWK, I invite you to join me as we think about the mythology of Star Wars in a whole new way, and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. You are here with your Star Wars family as we go to our favorite coffee shop and talk some Star Wars. On today's show, Joe Tavano and Mark Von Ohlen talk to us about the top five things we love about Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. And in the news segment, Tom joins me and we discuss my trip over the weekend to Rancho Obi-Wan and to Lucasfilm for the annual Rancho Obi-Wan Gala. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
Joining us today for a cup of coffee is the head honcho of RetroZapped, Joe Tavano.
Hey, what's going on, Dan?
Hey, good to hear from you, man. When we started the show, you said we haven't recorded for over a year, or about a year, which surprises me that it's been that long.
I know. Time flies, and it's just great to be back on Coffee with Kenobi. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, my pleasure, sir. Also joining us, and also an exciting time is had when we get to talk to him. He is the all-around head... I'm not going to say you're the head honcho of Tops, but you are in my heart, Mark, if that means anything. Mark Von Ohlen.
Oh, thank you for the awesome promotion, Dan. And I will forever now be telling people I am the head honcho of Tops, so thank you.
I like it. I like it. Well, I had the good fortune. I met Joe at Celebration Orlando, and I finally got to meet Mark face-to-face at San Diego Comic-Con earlier this year.
That was a blast of a show. It was great seeing you in real life too.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Twitter and podcasts become real, and it's always great to meet the other people in the fandom. It's my favorite part about going to shows.
I totally agree. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun one. We're going to give the top five things we love about Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. We, of course, have been going through these films in chronological order. We are on Attack of the Clones. For my money, it's my least favorite of the prequels. That being said, it's the one I watched the most. And that sort of seems like a paradox, but it's really not. And I will explain that somewhere in my list. But Mark, why don't we turn the microphone over to you? What is the first one you have on your list?
So I'm going to go in sort of random order. But one of the things I love about this movie is how everything is both literally and figuratively upside down. You know, the shot that establishes the movie sort of explains to you that things are not the way they're supposed to be. And that the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys. And you kind of don't know what side you're on. And it's all very confusing. And I'm just going to jump on with you said before, Dan. It's not my favorite of the prequels, but there are still a lot of great things to glean from the film and a lot of discussion points that come up more often than you would think. So anyone who slept on this movie, like maybe there are things about the movie that you don't particularly love, but I think the dissection of it and the discussion of it is a really rich experience regardless.
I totally agree. So that was, did you say that would be your first one?
Yeah, we'll summarize that by saying upside down.
Upside down. I like that. That's pretty insightful, and I agree. It's the one that I think has the most repeatability as far as sort of opening up the lore. Because if you don't, without episode two, you don't have key points in Revenge of the Sith. But we'll get to that. Mm. Joe, what's your first one?
Okay, I guess to start off, when I first saw this film, I absolutely loved it. Until I saw episode three, it was, you know, my favorite of the two. Not saying that episode one wasn't good. I love that too. But the thing that defined why I loved Attack of the Clones right off the bat was lightsabers, lightsabers, lightsabers. Mm-hmm. There were more lightsabers per capita in this film than any other Star Wars film. And once you got to the Battle of Geonosis and you saw like 50 just, you know, green and blue lightsabers light up and they're all running up at the battle droids, that was just, you know, hair tingling moment that just, you know, rocked my world. And I came up with an idea at that moment at my young age. And I said, the more lightsabers in Star Wars, the better. I disagree with that now, but it just goes to show how much it really like had such an effect on me and pumped me up.
I like that. Well, that sort of ties into my first one. I have for my first one, Count Dooku. First of all, Christopher Lee is such a presence anyway. And he took a role that could have arguably been not considered as serious. Because let's think about this. The other Darths in this series either have severely deadly looking face tattoos or incredible masks or just have a sinister presence. But he just this classy, dignified looking older gentleman with a nice trim silver beard. But you can tell by the way the hilt of his lightsaber, which is one of my absolute favorites. There's just a little bit of class there and a bit of pretentiousness, which belie this underbelly of just evil. I mean, he will go to no lengths. There are no lengths that he will not stoop to cause destruction for the galaxy. Ultimately, he gets his comeuppance, I suppose you could say. But it just his grace, his character, his ability to smile and have very evil intentions. But he does it in such a way where you don't even know you're being charmed until it's too late. He's very much a predator in that regard. I just think he's a magnificent character. And although he's one of the few that his Darth is not as mentioned as much as his regular name, Darth Tyrannus. In fact, I did a trivia contest last week and actually... some of the things I got from one of my favorite people at Tops, I used for part of trivia. And the one Darth they couldn't name was Darth Tyrannus. So that just shows you. Yeah, interesting. So Count Dooku, you are my number one, sir. Absolutely. Mark, let's go back to you. What is your second one?
I just want to say, I actually think that Christopher Lee would have been an awesome Palpatine. Ian McDiarmid's great as well, but he was on my list, but I've got more than five, so I got to swap him out. So let's do this on the fly.
I love it.
My next one is going to be creepy Anakin. So Hayden Christensen in this role is so creepy. And it's only as an adult now rewatching it that you understand how inappropriate his behavior is with Padme, and just how, like, there are red flags throughout this movie. This movie should be like Star Wars : red flags everywhere, you know? Like, see what's coming. And I think I read this and heard it from someone and compiled this together, so I don't want to take credit. But the word microdose wasn't really around like 10, 15 years ago in like the common culture. But I wonder if he's microdosing Padme with mind control to like get in there. Like, it's so horrifying. And that is one of the things that really works about the movie, because you know he becomes Darth Vader and you see them go down this horrible path. And the whole time you're screaming at it like a horror movie, like, stop, just run. If she just goes away, or if she figures out how to escape him, or he just didn't get introduced to her or something, like, everything would be fine. But like, that whole experience is the thing that I think actually pushes the film forward. Their love story is not a love story. It's a horror story.
Yeah, Anakin, I mean, this is a guy who went from being 10 years old and seeing basically a woman for the first time in his life, other than his mother, that had any sort of interest in him. And he became fixated and obsessed on this woman. And
it's really not unlike a first love. I mean, to a degree, when you're a very immature person.
Sure.
And I mean, of course, he takes it, you know, I don't remember the word Mark just used, but that was totally right.
Yeah. And you know, he just had absolutely no social experience in the realm of romance and how to deal with the feelings he was experiencing. And no one really helped him out with that either. And it's just, you know, it's just a tragedy waiting to happen from a relationship standpoint. Totally hard.
Not everyone was as suave as a young Joe Tavano or a young Mark Von Ohlen.
I was not suave. I'm still not.
I'm sure Kenobi had no problems. He had the Duchess Satine. He was doing okay. And, you know, I don't think he really was able to impart a lot of wisdom upon Anakin, who knows.
Well, he also wasn't aware, at least theoretically.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
They're also, you guys, remember, they're in a religion that I think we from the outside, honestly, if we were there, would describe as a cult. They're not allowed to have partners. So it's the kind of thing where they just don't know how to behave. And his dark side just like took over and was like, I want this thing. It's very objectifying. Yep. It's all very creepy. I think it's actually my number one thing I love about the movie. As I'm thinking, if we were actually doing this in like a rank order, I'd probably put this one at the top.
Okay. So there, we may come back to that. Joe, what's your next one?
I got to say one last thing on that. I think it's a really good point, Mark. And I always think of this movie with when they discuss the rules of the Jedi and the rules of attachment and love, and they're edicts without purpose at this point in the Jedi's lifespan. And yep. I think that's the major dissonance, because if Anakin was allowed to pursue his feelings and love as we, you know, Luke was later, maybe things would have been okay, you know, in the galaxy at large. Maybe the Jedi wouldn't have been closed off. But to move on.
Yeah.
Second point is that Count Dooku told the entire truth to Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it's such an amazing scene when he does so. And you can read it and read it and read it again and think about it and wonder if he's trying to play a ruse on Kenobi or if Dooku's looking for a way out at this point, that he might have been trapped by Sidious and maybe had said, okay, this is my last ditch effort to escape maybe a bad deal I got into. You notice in episode 2 that Dooku doesn't have the Sith eyes. He's, you know, he's still very well put together. He doesn't have the disfigurements of a Sith Lord. He's, you know, very fledgling in his darts, as it were. So you have to wonder, was this his last ditch effort? Because then you see in the Clone Wars, he got the Sith eyes. He's full-fledged evil, and he's really wreaking havoc. And it just seems like in episode 2, he's taking that first step from a political leader into something much deeper that maybe wasn't all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, that's a very that's the thing I've heard often where people they say he does, you know, Sith or Dooku could tell the whole truth, and he does, but that doesn't justify, because the way he frames it, you know, it's still manipulative. It's still not completely truthful because of the way that he approaches it. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Now,
it's still the intent to manipulate and to beguile.
So what if Kenobi was like, Dooku says, what if I told you that the Senate has been corrupted by a Sith Lord or something to that effect, not verbatim. And Kenobi was like, really? Tell me more. I'd love to learn more about this. And what if that conversation just went a whole different way? And he's, you know, and he said, I wish Qui-Gon were here. He would be able to help me now. And Kenobi is just very hard line. He's like, Qui-Gon, you would never even listen to you. He would never join you. And it was, Kenobi put up the wall. And once Kenobi put up that wall, Dooku was like, well, it may be, you know, he just went into his snarkiness. And it just felt very manipulative at that point. I think there was a reach out there. And I love had the subtlety of it, because you could read it both ways.
But you really think it was sincere. Like, I guess I never in my heart of hearts thought that Dooku truly believed Obi-Wan was going to fall for that. Did you believe that, Mark?
You know, I hadn't thought about that particular scene, but everything in this movie, and it's actually another bullet on my list, what I love about it is how it's like a masterclass in manipulation.
Yeah.
Mostly by Palpatine. But Dooku does it too. This wouldn't surprise me. I had never read into that. So now I got to watch this movie again, guys. Come on. This is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, once you watch a movie 10 times or more, you start picking up on these like little subtle things that other people think you're crazy for. But now I want to go watch that scene again and see if I see what Joe's seeing. Because I didn't last time or the other 9 or 10 times, but now I'm going to look at it differently. So, which was the reason why I love doing these podcasts. You get to hear stuff like this.
That's right. It makes you think about the world in different ways. My second one I have is Obi-Wan's investigation, his journey on Kamino. Not when he goes to the diner. That part is a little too real world for me. Just him being in a diner, I don't know, that just sort of threw me. But him going to Kamino and his conversations with Jango and Boba and talking to the Kaminoans, I just find that so captivating, so wonderful. You've got that great standoff between himself and Jango, where you get to see a Jedi face off against a bounty hunter for the first time, really. I mean, I guess it happens in Return of the Jedi, but not to this degree. And it's exciting. The sound effects are wonderful and brilliant when they're outside and in the rain, and just Obi-Wan trying to decipher things and figure them out is one of the reasons, one of my favorite sequences in that entire film. But definitely a reason why I like Attack of the Clones. So let's go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we'll give our next two things we love about Attack of the Clones. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
It is my absolute honor and privilege to thank our CWK Patreon contributors, Ben Elkington, Dennis Keithley, Rebecca Raven, Terry Lee, Chris Kavarka, Angela Sauce, Wayne Booker, Aaron Harris, Melinda Wolf, Mediocre Jedi, Connie Shee, BJ Smith, Christian Dale, Nick Deco, LJ Souter, Phil Picaro, Chris Metz, Jason Hall, Tim Bungaroth, Mark Souter, Mike Audette, Eric Struthers, Daz Davies, Jared Cantor, Brian McKinney, Thea Selby, and Jeff Ellis. Coffee with Kenobi has an exclusive podcast that is for you, for a member of Coffee with Kenobi's Patreon page, for $5 or more a month. And here is a clip from this week's show.
So I have a prediction to make on favorite candy.
Okay.
I bet you nothing makes Dan more happy than a popcorn ball with M&Ms in it.
Gross. I don't like popcorn balls.
That's the worst idea I've ever heard of. Who does that? I mean,
it's almost as bad as a Rice Krispie treat. I don't like Rice Krispie treats, by the way.
What?
What?
Gotcha-roos, yes, I'm in, but not.
Oh, gotcha-roos.
Those are great. Rice Krispie treats.
But do you remember the candy? Do you guys ever get the candy? I don't know what they're called. They're in the orange, or like wax paper. Orange and brown.
Oh yeah,
the peanut butter flavor.
Like what? Yeah, yes. What are those?
They're great.
Like,
they're
who
heaven.
Buys?
They're
they
peanut butter chews or something.
They're the best.
No, it'll take your teeth right out.
So that's actually a little bit different. Usually, I play the clip from last week's Patreon show, which was very fun, where we talked about George Lucas not being in the new Indiana Jones, as far as not being involved in production of Indiana Jones number 5. And we talked about how we display our collections and got a lot of great feedback on our Patreon page. So thank you to our Patreon contributors for that. But this was a clip of what's coming out this week, and it's our Halloween special. We talk about our favorite candies. And I actually cut it off right before Tom and Corey and I had this incredible laughing fit because of a very random candy, which you can hear more of that conversation as well as our other Coffee with Kenobi CWK pour-overs on patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi. Again, that is for $5 or more a month, and you have access to that exclusive Coffee with Kenobi show hosted by myself, Tom Gross, and Corey Club. We also have t-shirts, coffee mugs, phone cases, and all kinds of other goodies. If you are interested in learning more about this, how to get those things, how to listen to CWK Pour Over, or anything else, just let me know, email me, send me a tweet, or, of course, go to patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi. After you've checked out our Patreon page, be sure to pour yourself a cup of One Nation Coffee. One Nation Coffee is the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. It smells amazing and tastes even better. They even have a subscription service that is really convenient. Be sure to go to www.onenationcoffee.com to order the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi today. We are back, and Mark, we are back to you. What is the third one you have on your list for the top five things you love about Attack of the Clones?
Well, you had just mentioned the adventure on Geonosis. Mine ties into that, and it's badass Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, episode one, if you're watching this in sequential order, you know, we get him as the understudy, the Padawan. And then in this movie, he's really take charge. I still don't love his hair. It's not perfect until part three. But he's going on his own mission. He's sort of breaking some of the rules. You can see where that Kenobi, that like fireball Kenobi is, and it's starting to brew. And you get most of it on Geonosis when he encounters Jango and uncovers the secret of the clones. So I enjoy just Ewan McGregor throughout.
Yeah, you'll definitely know. Now won't get an argument from Coffee with Kenobi on that one. He's pretty spectacular. Joe, what do you have for your next one?
You guys have both touched on Kenobi and his journey. I was going to say, you know, the idea that Attack of the Clones is a mystery story with Kenobi as a detective, but I'm not going to do. I'm going to throw that one out because I think we've covered most of that ground. My next one is the entire search montage on Tatooine. And it's not a very large part of the movie, but it has such an amazing dramatic effect. They bring back Duel of the Fates for the only time in the movie. And the shots are so powerful of Anakin just sitting there against a setting sun. And it's just a black figure talking to the Jawas. And seeing him go through the Dune Sea on a speeder and watching night set, and it's reminiscent of the Searchers, you know, from way back in the day, the classic Western. And at the end of it, you have Anakin literally descending into darkness off a cliff. And years ago, I had read a very interesting piece about how that was a symbol of him, you know, falling to his very first dark side act, the slaughtering of the Sand People.
Which is definitely something I'm going to talk about a little bit later. Yeah. There's a lot of powerful narrative in this film that sometimes gets lost, but yeah, there's some very, very heavy stuff in this one.
Yeah.
I would argue it's the darkest of the films. You know, I mean, Revenge of the Sith ends on a really sour note, but this one is all the buildup. That's why I mentioned the red flag thing earlier. It's like, oh, it's one thing after another. It's almost heavy-handed. If you know it's coming, if you don't know it's coming, it's just it's almost like a mystery that's unraveling in front of your face. We can see it, but the people around us can't.
It's dramatic irony at its finest. We know what's going on, but the people on the screen don't, and that just it makes it so much more rich and powerful. And this is truly a Shakespearean way to tell a story. Very much is. My third one is a little more I love about this movie. It's one of my favorite things about any of the Star Wars films, and it is the sound effect of the seismic charge from Slave One, as you know, again, when he's chasing down Obi-Wan through that asteroid field. I guess it's an asteroid field. It's just an incredible sound. It was one of those things where at first with the way it pulses, I thought there was something wrong with the sound in the theater, you know, ironic considering what people thought was wrong with The Last Jedi as far as the sound effect with Holdo. But this one was a little bit different. It really did feel like there was something up. And then there's this huge echoing thing and you hit the rocks and then he's flying away. It's just tremendous. And when you watch it in surround sound, oh boy, is it powerful stuff.
Yeah, that's iconic. I can hear it in my head right now.
Yeah.
It's such amazing sound design. A highlight of that entire movie.
Oh, I agree. Mark, what's your next one?
So I've been very dark this whole time, so I'm going to throw in my one fun item.
All right.
And this goes back to what Joe said earlier about lightsabers. I think the mix of Jedi characters in this movie is my favorite compilation of Jedi, you know, whether it be on the Council or at the Battle of Geonosis. You see a little bit of everyone. And I don't know if you know this, Dan, but like my top characters are all weird ones. Like Ahsoka is my number one, along with Leia. But then I love Barriss Offee and Luminara, mostly because of the characters. But they're in this movie, along with Kit Fisto and a whole bunch of other randos and people who are like in Geonosis for like a hot second and then they're dead. And you got to go look them up on Wikipedia, because even like big nerds like us, like we forget sometimes, like who's there and, you know, what color lightsaber they have and all that stuff. But that's a cool thing that little kids really like. And that's who this movie was made for, was for kids. So while we've got all this like dark stuff happening for, I think, the older fans, there's this really great battle at the end with a lot of fun looking, interesting alien Jedis with lots of multicolored lightsabers. And I think that's kind of the heart of Star Wars in a lot of ways. It should just be a fun fight.
That's a fun one. And I agree. And Joe had sort of hinted around to that earlier, but all the Jedi in here, and there's some very interesting ones. And I think kind of the diversity of the Jedi, as far as, you know, the different costumes and the different alien species styles, I think they're a little more mature in this one than they are in episode one, a little more practical. I mean, you can actually believe when they're, that they could duel with a lightsaber and be active. Whereas some of the characters in episode one in the Jedi Council necessarily seem like they could be fierce lightsaber opponents. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's so cool to have all of those Jedi there. It was the closest we've ever seen to the Jedi in their prime. Even though it's far past the Jedi Order's prime, but it really was. It gave you an inkling of what a Jedi battle could have truly been like.
Yeah, exactly. We saw a little bit at the beginning of episode one, but this is really a little more, well, intense, you know, and more like sort of on an epic grandiose scale. Are we on your next one?
Yes, we are.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, speaking of, past their prime, it's literally one line said by Mace Windu that blew my mind, and it's something that no one really talks about much when they talk about the entire prequel trilogy. Mace Windu says, "Our ability to use the Force has been diminished." And the full line is, "I think it's time that we tell the Senate that our ability to use the Force has been diminished." A dirty little secret that not many people realize is that the Jedi literally could not use the Force as well as they had been able to even years prior. And all of the amazing things they did, in the Clone Wars, everything that came afterwards, they were not even able to tap into the Force at a level which they knew they could have in previous years. And that speaks volumes to what happened to the Jedi and just how strong the dark side was in sucking all of the air out of the room, so to speak, and how imbalanced, you know, the power was in that dynamic.
There's a lot of metaphor in that statement, and there's a lot to analyze about that. Where, you know, when people said to me, how long have you been doing this show? What do you guys talk about? Don't you run out of stuff to talk about? Well, no. I mean, you could take one line, like you just mentioned. You could spend an entire hour podcast or more on it. I mean, I think that's a good example.
Let's go. Let's do it.
I think that ties in nicely to what I was saying earlier. Like, it was my very first bullet with the upside down thing.
Yeah.
They're not the way they seem. The bad guy, what is it? The shroud of the dark side has fallen. No one can see the future. Yoda can't see what's coming. No one can see what's coming, but no one can also see what's directly in front of their stupid faces. It's so.
It's true. There's the hashtag for the show.
Oh my God. I hope use that as a pull quote to promote the show.
I like it.
That guy from Tops is so angry.
And we love it. That's right. That's right. I love it. Okay. So my fourth one is Yoda's lightsaber prowess. This is the scene, guys. I mean, I know that they showed this clip, I believe, at Celebration 2, if I'm not mistaken, but it's sort of in one of the panels. But the moment, and I was, of course, to no one's surprise who's ever heard this show before, I was very anti-spoiler before episode two, I was almost militant about it. I was stayed off of everything. I was sure that when I was around Star Wars fans, I didn't bring up that I was a Star Wars fan. I was just really worried about anything being ruined. So in that moment at the end of episode two, when Yoda walks out very calmly with his cane and people start to clap, I remember getting this chill thinking, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, what is he going to do? What's going to happen? And then when Count Dooku says this contest is going to be determined by basically our skills of lightsaber, and he opens up his cloak and the hilt floats to his hand and he turns it on and he starts to flip. I clapped and cheered like I was at game 7 of the World Series, and I hooted and hollered like I'd never done in the movie theater before. And it was such a refreshing, empowering feeling to see Yoda doing that, this hero of ours since 1980, to see not only was he using a lightsaber, but using it in a way that we'd never ever seen before or since. And it was just electric. I had goosebumps. The only thing that's ever come close to that for me was when Hulk smashes Loki in the end of the first Avengers movie. But this was the one, man. This did it for me. This was an incredible, incredible moment.
You got to remember, too, this is the first time we ever saw Yoda as a CG character.
That's right.
Before that, all puppets, they were never able to do much of anything with Yoda in terms of physical movement. So they went broke, and it was unbelievable.
And it was, talking about risky, too, Mark, don't you think? Because let's face it, the special effects weren't 100% perfect on this. You have lost your audience for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true of puppetry, too, though. So it was super risky in the 80s with the puppets. It was very risky with the CGI in the early aughts. And I think that because you have Frank Oz involved as both the voice, and then in the 80s it was the hands, you're protected, you're safe. Luckily, there's also a lot of latent love for Yoda that built up over years, and people were waiting for that. People were waiting for Yoda to open his lightsaber and kick some butt, and he delivered.
That's why I think it's even more risky. I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's why I think it was even more risky, because there's so much built-in Yoda love. That if they're doing to it right, I mean, you know, you guys may not be aware of this, but there's a lot of criticism of The Last Jedi from a select few. So people get pretty upset when they think something that's sacrosanct is not done the way they think it should be. And boy, did they hit a home run here.
Yeah, I would agree that Yoda fight was done correctly. So it should get the praise that it otherwise doesn't get. I don't even want to talk about The Last Jedi because there'll be so much anger and whatnot. I love that movie, by the way. I want to put that on record out there again that I love that movie.
Oh,
right on.
I'll probably say that I think it's a work of absolute 100% genius. I think it's brilliant. I think it's massively brilliant. Yeah, it's a master. It really is a masterpiece. I agree. All right, go ahead.
I was just going to say, 10 years from now, everyone will be saying how great it is.
Oh yeah.
And I'm a bandwagoner. You know, like I'm a licensee. I'm that guy. Like I'll let you know what I think is working, what's not working, and the things that I don't love, I won't really talk about too much. But Last Jedi, I'm in.
Well, okay. So what I was going to say is, I said this at San Diego Comic-Con. I'm going to say it again. Mark Von Ullen needs a podcast. You need a podcast, dude. You're great at this stuff. I love it. So let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, Tom is going to chat with me really briefly about my trip last weekend to Rancho Obi-Wan and Lucasfilm. And then when we come back, we will finish our list of the top 5 things we love about Attack of the Clones. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Greetings. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Harry's Razors has done so much to help me get that look that I'm going for. As you've probably seen on Coffee with Kenobi's Twitter and Instagram when I was at Rancho Obi-Wan and Lucasfilm over the weekend, I've got my beard a little early for No Shave November, but I just, you know, once it gets fall for me, I get that itch to grow that beard. But I still don't want to have a neck beard. I still want to have, you know, my beard to look groomed and nice, and Harry's Razors helps with that because you've got an awesome close shave with the razor. It's smooth, it's comfortable with the great glide, the weight of the razor, and it's got the trimmer blade that helps you sculpt the look that you are going for. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades, and they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they've created a trial offer which you can claim by going to harrys.com/CWKfamily. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades, made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. And that is why they have bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. Now, I'm no math major, but that's a long time, which means you know there's some quality there. And by selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand. Just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. And you have a quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they will give you a full refund. Now let's get to the details of this trial offer. And I know you're going to want to do just that. You get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip, and the trimmer blade that I mentioned above, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/CWKfamily. Make sure you go to harrys.com/CWKfamily to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. We are back, and we are not having our traditional news segment, but this is not a bad thing because Tom is still with us. Tom, great to have you back on Coffee with Kenobi, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. This is always a weekly pleasure, for sure.
And it almost seems silly to, like, formally introduce you ever on the show because you're as much a mainstay as I am. But this is great because you and I, is the Coffee with Kenobi tradition, is we have not gotten to chat about my most recent visit to Rancho Obi-Wan and everything that happened over that weekend. So I'm looking forward to chatting with you about this.
Yeah, well, I'm especially excited because, you know, I was with you last year. And so so excited to hear how things went this weekend. So let's just start off with where did you go? We know you're at Rancho, but I know you made some other stops, as do people who follow Coffee with Kenobi on Twitter or Instagram. But for those who are, what do we call, social media shutouts, tell us where you went this weekend.
So yeah, I went to San Francisco. It was a quick trip, left on a Saturday and came home Sunday for the purposes of going back to the Rancho Obi-Wan Gala. And it's always a wonderful time, and your presence was definitely missed. In fact, even when I went to rent a car, I went to the exact same counter. I never purposely planned to pick the same company, but I typically end up doing so, apparently. And but the line to get the rental car itself was about 30 people deep, if you can picture that. So it took quite a while. I actually had to get my car from a kiosk. You remember those kiosks where you talk on the phone and it's like kind of a Jetsons thing?
Yeah.
So got it, and I got a mini SUV. I got a really good deal on it. And then they said, hey, can we upgrade you to a full-size SUV for no charge? I said, sure. Well, gas is much more expensive on one of those. So maybe I should have thought about that. But actually ended up being fine. I drove all over creation and the needle barely moved on the thing. So it was fun. I had plenty of room. My first stop was to Lucasfilm. I met Clayton Sandell there, of course, from ABC. And he and I have become really good friends ever since the Solo premiere in Hollywood in May of this year, of 2018. So he and I met at the Starbucks right by Lucasfilm, which you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we went to the fountain, and then we were fortunate enough to get to go inside Lucasfilm on a Saturday, which doesn't often happen. And it's okay for me to say this, it was all over Twitter anyway, but we got to go inside the main theater in Lucasfilm that George used for screenings. And I'd never actually heard anything inside the theater before, but this time we watched Black Panther, Marvel's February 2018 Black Panther masterpiece, and Ryan Coogler was there as a guest of the Visual Effects Society. And after the film, he was up on stage, and I was 6 rows from the stage. I probably could have been in the front row, honestly, but I just wanted to try to just sort of ease my way in. And they talked about the movie. They talked with a lot of effects guys about how they did some of the incredible effects that they did for the film, what the colors symbolized on Black Panther's suit, how it glows purple versus when Killmonger's would glow. And I just was fascinated both as an English teacher and a film fan and just such a huge fan of Coogler. Anyway, and I love Creed. I think it's a great movie. I'm very excited for the sequel to that. So that was a huge bonus thrill that I did not expect. It was a marvelous experience. And the surround sound in that theater, Tom, is unbelievable. Like, imagine the best surround sound you've ever heard and multiply that by infinity, and that's what it sounds like.
So that thump you heard about 3 minutes ago was my jaw hitting the floor. Now, let me get this straight. You happened upon a screening of Black Panther in Lucasfilm's theater.
Well, yeah, we were invited. We knew some folks from there that saw us and said, hey, what are you guys doing here? Do you want to come in and see this? So yeah, in a way, yeah, we just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Oh my gosh. Well, we know from a pour over a few, it's been weeks now, I suppose. Black Panther's like in the top five for me in Marvel films.
Oh, yeah, that top two for me.
That is phenomenal.
Oh, dude. What? Yeah, I'm such a fan of Coogler. And I just seeing it like that was just, oh my. I'd only seen it the one time in the theater, so now two.
That just gives me goosebumps in that theater. Now I was with you prior to that in not, you know, I've never heard anything in there other than we went in and you can feel the acoustics when you speak in there, but I can only imagine a full fledged surround sound, you know, film, going in there. That must just be, amazing. Oh, amazing. Amazing. Okay. So geez, there's your trip right there, but that's not all.
No. Then we went to In-N-Out Burger. What else do you need to hear, right?
Okay, there you go.
No, we did that. We ate that. And then Clayton and I went and we went to the gala together, Ranch Obi-Wan Gala. And we actually were running a little bit late because we spent more time at In-N-Out Burger than I think either of us realized. But it was as you remember, the weather was a little bit nicer than it was the year before, but there were a ton of people that we got to speak with. And I'm not sure what you want to ask me, but I'm happy to answer any questions you have, or I could just wax on and on.
Well, that you led me right to my next question was, who did you get to hang out with when you were at Rancho?
So there are always a lot of people there. My biggest regret, and I hope you're listening to this, Jeff, is Jeff Ellis, one of our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon contributors. He had emailed me in advance and told me that he was going to be there. I was very excited to meet him. And for whatever reason, you know how it is. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to see. He and I never actually got to meet there. So, and he and I have emailed back and forth since the gala. So, Jeff, I really look forward to eventually getting to shake your hand. And Jeff is going to be a guest co-host one of these days on Coffee with Kenobi. So that's good. So, unfortunately, he is not among the people that I got to say I spoke with, but very soon. So when Clayton and I first walked in, we walked into the library, you know, the coolest part to me. Mm, well, fantastic. One of the parts of the entire thing. And right off the bat, I walk in and I see Pablo Hidalgo and Justin Boulder and Kristen Baber. Yeah, right off the bat.
Just a few people. Yeah.
And it was great. Cause I mean, I've talked to Pablo in person before, but you know, not as long as we did. He and I talked for probably 20, 25 minutes in the library about G.I. Joe, about Transformers. Of course, we talked about Star Wars and the books. And I was pretty pumped because I got to share with him that I'm going to talk about this later on the show when we go through our top five things we love about Attack of the Clones. But I got to show him where I contributed to Ian's book, especially the Phantom of Menace.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He opened up the book and he saw my name and he was, oh, that's really great. I didn't know that. And so that was kind of a cool little thrill for me that I got to tell him that. And he was great. But that was, and he and I actually talked quite a bit throughout the evening. At one point in the evening, it was myself, Clayton Sandell, Brian Young from Full of Sith, Cole Horton, and Pablo, and then Kristen Hidalgo, his wife, showed up. So the five of us, six of us were sitting around chatting for probably about 45 minutes, and we were just laughing hysterically about everything under the sun. And boy, those are the kind of moments. These are why you go to the Ranch Obi-Wan Gala, because you get to have a lot of one-on-one time with some great people that you don't normally get to talk to for a very lengthy basis. And That was a huge thrill for me.
And it's very laid back and yes. lends itself to be very conversational. There's no stress. There's no pressure. What a great I'm sure you had some great conversation and stories to share in the future there. Who else did you see?
So I also, of course, got to talk to Matt Martin for a while, which is always great. He's one of my favorite people that I've ever met since I started the Star Wars journey. Holly Fry from Full of Sith, who's, you know, you've met her before too. She sure. is so, she's effervescent and so funny. Uh-huh. And I loved talking with her, and her husband was there as well. So that was super fun. Anthony Carboni was there. I'd never seen him at the gala before.
Is that right?
Oh. Yeah. It is cool. He's, you know, he's great. I think he was there with his wife, and they were pretty cool. I didn't talk to him too long cause I didn't want to bug him, but I've met him a couple times. So we got to chat very, very briefly. Martin Keeler was there from Fantatrax, and I got to talk with him and his wife, and they came up and introduced themselves, and boy, talk about a great guy. I mean, all the guys from Fantatrax are always so gregarious and charming, which is great. I got to talk with Marcus Doring, of course, from the 501st, not as long as I would have liked, but we did get to chat a little bit. And then Pete Vilmer from Lucasfilm was there. He's the director of fan relations, and he does some PR stuff too. And so he and I had a really awesome conversation. Got some great stuff, you know, just being able to chat with him and just sort of catch up with one another. And then something amazing happened. The auction was about to start. At Rancho Obi-Wan, the gala. See, when you go on a tour, you walk around and, you know, Steve or whoever is there at the time will give you a tour and they'll walk you through the museum and give you some great little stories and anecdotes and take anywhere from an hour to a couple hours, depending on sort of where the conversations go. Mm-hmm. But then that's it. You start at the back, you go to the front, and then that's it. End in the arcade. But for the gala, you have your free run of everything. You can just walk around, see whatever. You could spend 2 hours in front of the Kenner action figures if you want to, right? So it just gives you more options. So one of the things they do at the end of the night, though, after you've done all that and you've had your dinner and you've had your drinks and done whatever, they have the huge auction, which Steve is a part of, and he pretty much runs it. Mm-hmm. And so I walk in there with Pete, and all of a sudden Steve is in this chair on the stage, and he looks back at Pete and I, and he stands up and goes, "Hey, oh, hi there." And he stood up and he starts waving, and he was waving he seemed very excited. And I thought, oh, he's definitely waving at Pete. Then I turn around, and he wasn't waving at Pete. He was waving at me. So he gets up off where he was standing and he walks through everybody in the auction. He runs right up to me. He goes, "Hey, Dan, I'm so glad you're here." And he gave me this big hug. Oh. And I got to tell you, Tom, like, I was so moved by that. I was so choked up by that, because this is a man I've looked up to for so long. And I've idolized him as a collector and just as a person. And, you know, we've developed a rapport over the years through the show and through going to the gala. It's now my third gala. And I just thought it was so wonderful and so sweet. And the thing is, it wasn't because I was doing anything special. That's just how he is. Like, he is a very friendly guy. He's very nice. He doesn't forget a face. And, you know, I thought that was wonderful. That moment was worth going there. Just that moment alone.
Absolutely. He's so well known for his collection. I mean, of course, his work with Lucasfilm, but his collection and work he does at Rancho. But the thing that you don't see is how approachable he is. And I will always remember that his, even last year, I saw the recognition he saw in you. But then I met him for the first time right in the threshold as we entered and going up the stairs there by his office.
Yeah.
And then I remember later on, we were outside by the sand crawler and the land speeder there. Mm-hmm. And he just walked right over to me like he knew me for years.
Yeah.
And just said, "Are you having a good time? And it's so good that you're here." And I just felt so welcomed by him. So that's so great to hear. That recognition he's so graceful. That is fantastic. I am curious, and this may be a really hard question to answer, because I know when I walked into Rancho last year, it was so overwhelming and just happy. So happy to see all of that stuff. So I have to ask, and maybe you'll have no answer to this, but what's new at Rancho?
No, I found myself saying constantly when I was walking around, "Oh, that's new. Oh, that's new. Oh, that's new."
Cool.
oh, this is over here now. They just moved everything around. The BB-8 collection has moved. There's a lot more Porg stuff. They've got this huge display that I put on Instagram from the premiere of The Last Jedi with some of the armor from The Last Jedi. There was a display not in behind glass, but the display that someone there told me they thought was the first four action figures Steve ever bought. And nice. Obi-Wan was one of them, of course, and Darth Vader. And that was a magnificent thing. I mean, that was very powerful. The video games have changed around a little bit, and he's got some like slot machines in there now that I don't remember seeing last time. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember seeing slot machines. I was so overwhelmed by the pinball, though. I love pinball.
Yeah, the pinball has been moved to, but it's still there. And I made sure to play the original Star Wars arcade game and blow up the Death Star, because you have to do that when you're at Rancho Obi-Wan.
That's yeah. Kind
of thing. And it's just sort of like where things were moved around. He had different things out on display, too. And I was excited because, you know, you hear that they change things around a lot, and I'm here to testify that is definitely the case.
Does he still have the 1977 bedroom set up?
Yeah, he does. He does. I thought I saw a few different things there as well. And I swear I saw different things from the Kenner line as well. And maybe just I'd forgotten over the last year. But no, sure. I think that was definitely a real thing. It was pretty great.
Did you eat in the back room with Jabba the Hutt?
You know, back there, I didn't either. I actually ate in that. There was a big tent that's a heated tent.
Oh, okay.
And because we were kind of late to the party, most people had already eaten by the time we'd gotten there. So we ate in that little tent area. But back in the Jabba area, that's where they had the silent auction. It wasn't back in Steve's office.
Oh.
It was up in that huge area. Because that's where I got to see, and I can't believe to mention, but that's where I got to see James Burns, who's, of course, one of my favorite people on Star Wars from Jedi News. And he and I didn't get to catch up near as much as either of us would have liked, but he was very busy taking care of the silent auction back there.
Oh, wow. That silent auction was so exciting. That was so much fun to see the things and the unique items that people had donated on the benefit or the behalf of Rancho, and just some of the – I'm not an auction person, but – it was so much fun watching some of the bidding going back and forth and just to see, you know, how people value different pieces. And it was just a lot of fun.
It was fun. Also, Brian Sims was there, and he and I didn't get to chat very much. I know he had to leave a little bit earlier than he would have liked to, but Brian Sims is awesome. And it would be hard to be there to be a gal without Brian there. So it was good to see him. And I got to show you the badges and the name tags and the lanyards. They did them a little bit different. You know, the books that they have where you keep track of stuff, it was all attached. It was all part of the name tags. Remind me to show you tomorrow at school.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at my badge right now from last year. That's very cool. So the my last question about your trip, cause it was a whirlwind. Mm-hmm. I have to ask, did you end up having to sprint to catch your flight like we did last year through the airport? It was like a scene from some adventure or action adventure movie where we were, remember last year?
I do.
Midnight in the San Francisco airport, full-fledged sprint.
That's right. Running. Pushing each other down. Oh yeah. No. Yeah. See, so last year in 2017, Tom and I, we went to the gala. And we left from the gala to the airport because I thought, well, I'll save money on the hotel. I don't mind sleeping on the plane. You know, I'll get home to see my family earlier. No big deal. Yeah. That was a disaster because we were exhausted and we were sprinting like crazy to get through security to catch our plane, which we did. So this year, my plane left at 6:40 in the morning and the gala gets over at 10 the night before. So you're still pushing it, right? But at least I got a decent amount of sleep. And the great thing is, I'm so used to Illinois time. So when I have to wake up at, you know, 4 a.m. in California, at 6:00, I am in Illinois and I'm definitely way up before 6:00. So I feel like Superman. I'm like, oh, you guys are tired. It's fine with me. This is easy because you got that Illinois time advantage. So I got to the airport and dropping off the rental car can be kind of a challenge because it's a pretty, it's like a labyrinth trying to find the way to return your rental cars in San Francisco's airport. I was told that we should fly into Oakland next time, so maybe we'll consider that. So we'll do that slowly.
But you know.
Yeah, for sure. But no, when I got through security, they were starting to board, but I didn't have to run because the gate was pretty close to where I was. And it wasn't too bad at all. It was a huge plane, and I still got on there with plenty of time to spare.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I hear that Coffee with Kenobi is going on the road this weekend. You want to give a little preview of a special show that'll be going on?
I do. Star Wars yes. Reads Day. Hello. Woo-hoo. It's going to be back. Is this our fourth year doing it or third?
Fourth year. Yeah.
Our fourth. So it'll be our fourth live remote from the high school where Tom and I are educators. And it's going to be a great time. It's going to be from 9:15 to 10 a.m. Maybe yep. we'll try to do it live through Blog Talk Radio if I can try to get that to work. That would be kind of fun.
That'd be fun. That would
if
be
we
cool.
could do that. But I can tell you what the topic's going to be. It's going to be the top five Star Wars books that we love.
Oh, fantastic. Yep. I love it.
So, and maybe we'll have people who have come to see the show or listen to the show that they can get a chance to share and weigh in on their favorite Star Wars book. So, Tom, get your top five ready. Is Corey going to be there this weekend? Do you know?
I don't think so. I think they're hosting some family this weekend. So I think
that's right.
When I talked to him last week when we were playing some Dungeons and Dragons, he said he had to bow out, sadly. So
no problem. Well, I will definitely be sure to get everything moving here, and we will be sure to see what other people that come to Star Wars Reads Day have as far as their favorite Star Wars book. So that'll be good. And Tom, you and Maureen always do an incredible job. So I'm looking forward to it for sure. It's definitely a highlight of the year for us.
All right.
Very good. Well, hey, thanks for asking me about that. Let's go ahead and take another break. When we come back, Joe and Mark will rejoin me to finish our list of the top five things we love about Attack of the Clones. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee, tea, or me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi is brought to you by One Nation Coffee, the official brew of Coffee with Kenobi. I start my morning every single day with One Nation Coffee because it is the best. You can start your coffee subscription so you never miss out on the best coffee in the galaxy by going to www.onenationcoffee.com today. Plus, enter the code KENOBI10, KENOBI10, all one word, to set up a coffee subscription and save 10% off your first order. I mentioned at the top of the show, and it is worth repeating, MEI and Mouse Fan Travel is the way to go for all of your travel needs. They have signature service and expert advice to help clients maximize their vacation time and dollar. They help your family enjoy everything the Disney theme parks and the cruise line have to offer, help plan every detail, and share invaluable tips. And it's not just for the Disney World and Disneyland theme parks. It's also for anywhere you want to go on your vacation. They have been there. They know the best way to get around, the best restaurants, all of it. They are so helpful, and they can get you the best price, too. Be sure to go to www.mousefantravel.com today and let them know Coffee with Kenobi sent you. We're back, and we have one left on our list, the top five things we love about Attack of the Clones. We do have a couple of honorable mentions. At least I have a couple. I'm not sure how many YouTube gents have, but we will get to that. Mark, what is the last one you have on your list?
Oh boy. My whole list was really dark except for that last one, which was fun. I'm going back to dark on this one. So I think that the movie, the reason we're still talking about it this many years later, is that it's this big indictment on religion and politics and war, and presents us with a lot of questions on what is your role as those three things intersect. So someone like an Obi-Wan Kenobi or a Yoda, the Jedi Council, you know, they're a very organized religion, maybe a cult, who is tasked with being the peacekeepers of the universe, and then they are thrust into war. And what is the correct response? And they're not just thrust into it, they are manipulated into it by the other side. Oddly enough, there's one puppet master putting both sides against each other. So you're left with all these really interesting political things happening in the background, while dealing with people who shouldn't really be going to war, and are they going to war for the right reason, and how did they get down there? That's the kind of thing for me where I still come back to that all the time. Like I was mentioning, you know, Mon Mothma being the leader of the rebels is almost hilarious because she's a pacifist, but it gives you a great character to play with because you've got some guardrails, and it gives you a moral perspective. So for me, that's what I take away most from this movie is not so much the answers, but the questions that we're presented with on all of those fronts. And it's why I like talking about this movie more than I even do watching.
Yeah, to me, Star Wars is at its best when we have more questions than answers. I completely agree with you.
Wow, Mark threw me for a loop there. That was profound and astute and, you know, something that is 100% true. And I, you know, perfectly encapsulates what I love about Attack of the Clones, because that sort of complexity is just really, what makes this movie shine. It's also what draws some criticism to the movie, but I think that really is unfounded. So to cap that off, what could I have said? It kind of pales in comparison if I said something like Jawa juice, but or definitely. I think I have to give it a hand to Padme, and I have to give it a hand to the character of Padme and how she was developed from this basically a stationary princess at the beginning in episode one, kind of a plucky teen who wanted to learn more about the world, and then all of a sudden was revealed to be this leader who took action. It turns out, you know, she had a life in the politics. She was a queen for a while, and then she turned out to be a very concerned politician, and it had her head really in the right place when it came to where she wanted her relationship with Anakin to go and where her priorities were in terms of the Battle of Geonosis, and just at every point in the movie, you know, Padme seems to be on top of things, as Obi-Wan would say. And, you know, she was the first one even out of the chain when they were shackled up. And you gotta give that lady credit, because it was a pretty cool role.
Oh, yeah. This is probably her strongest performance in the prequels, as far as like having the most to do on screen. I think that gives her the most. She's the most well-rounded in this one.
This was a good deal. Yeah.
I think it shows a disparity between, you know, Anakin and Padme, she just seems much more mature than Anakin, and that just shines through, and the dynamic is there in every single scene.
It's funny you mentioned the maturity thing, because one of the things I think that makes the relationship between them so creepy is that he was 10 years old, in the part one, and yet his maturity has not matured. And yet she is now a senator and, you know, traveling the galaxy and doing all these incredible things. And he's like, I still love you, lady I barely know. And I was like, oh, my God. It could have still been Jake playing that role, like just aged up, like however many years that would have been in between, like 3 years. He is wildly more immature than she is. She's demonstrated all this growth, and he didn't. And I think that's what almost made his turn to the dark side that much easier. His brain is, like, not developed.
Yeah, it's true. And when you're being told to suppress basic human emotions and the needs like compassion and empathy, that can tend to cause problems. Yep. Although, I mean, it didn't seem to cause problems for some of the other Jedi, but I guess that's a podcast, I guess, for another time.
I mean, he was a demigod, right?
What's that?
I mean, Anakin was, you know, half born of the Force. So there's something about being the chosen one, I think, that maybe his emotions ran a little hot.
My last one, for my money, probably the most powerful narrative moment in the film, it has to be the Tusken Raider massacre. No matter, even the most staunch of critics of this film, I would challenge them to really look at that scene and not find terror and power and electricity and frenzy in this bloodthirsty moment where this boy holds his mother and she dies in his arms. And he suddenly is hit with this realization of what has happened, how he thought everything he'd done to that point was to get her back, and then she's gone. And he's filled with more power than he's ever felt in his life, and more rage, and his moral compass is vanquished in that moment, perhaps forever, or at least until Return of the Jedi, really. And it's a psychological crowning achievement by George Lucas to capture the emotion of this and the way that John Williams escalates the tension through those strings and the music. It is a moment that every time I watch, I am filled with dread and goosebumps. And I think this is why I love narrative. This is why I love Star Wars. There's so much power in this moment. And it is basically like kicking down the door, blasting the door open and saying, Darth Vader is coming and you need to be extremely afraid because he will have no mercy. It's amazing.
It is the reddest of the red flags.
Yes, yes. It is the reddest of the flags.
I'm convinced that Palpatine killed Shmi Skywalker precisely at that moment to draw that out of him.
I don't think that.
I'm so convinced because of what happens at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith when he literally like brings in like diegetic sounds from that moment into Anakin's mind. Like, remember the sound, people, and you hear the background. And I just feel like it was just so manipulated and so orchestrated. But that very moment for her to die, and it just seems so. Everything else, he's orchestrated every single other thing in this trilogy. Why not that?
I think we have a tendency to give him too much credit. He basically capitalizes on moment. I mean, life is messy. Real life is messy. Bad things happen. There are tragic things that happen. There are also wonderful, good, powerful things that happen. But he is so patient that, you know, a healthy person in that moment doesn't massacre and kill everyone. They may get revenge. They may do something, but they don't do that. He does. So it's very, very easy to push him where you need to push him when you've been kind of needling in his brain for over, you know, 13 years. And when you also consider the fact that that was basically his older male role model. I just think he capitalized on a really, really bad moment in Anakin's life.
Fair enough.
Yeah. What do you think, Marks? Are you going to settle the tie for us?
Oh, I was going to say, I'm going to meet you guys in the middle because I think that scene has set up so much of what's happened, and the capture of Shmi by the Sand People could have easily been done by him or one of his minions. I don't know if he killed her in that exact moment, but I don't think that she had long to live regardless. And if she did survive, he would have found a way to kill her. So, you know, it just so happened at that moment. But you're right that Palpatine will see an opportunity and seize it better than anyone. That's the thing. Like, he doesn't let opportunities slip by. If there's an opportunity to kill someone, take someone down, manipulate them, he's on it. Like, he's basically batting 1,000, I think. It's possible, but I think it's somewhere in the middle of what you guys are saying.
I think if he like purposefully kills her, I think that makes him not as compelling. I think that's just kind of boring, actually. I think that the notion psychologically of taking advantage of a weak moment in someone's life, a horrible moment that, you know, very much could have changed them. I mean, look at how Padme handles it. She handles it. She could have judged him. She could have said, oh, heck no, I'm out of here. Talk about a red flag. My friend Mark warned me about this. But instead,
he microdosed.
Yeah, right. Well, she she responds with compassion and love and staves off this potential predatory assault on the galaxy. At least, you know, kind of stymies it for at least 3 years. I mean, really, that could have been the turning point right there. I mean, Palpatine could have showed up and spiked his Sith football and taken care of her then, but it wasn't time yet. It wasn't the egg hadn't quite yet hatched, if so to speak.
I just can't believe that the Jedi Council let him kill all those people and keep him on the council and didn't do anything.
I don't think they knew.
I am suspicious of that. So. Really? Yeah, and this is what goes back to, like, my number one thing, like, organized religion, this particular organized religion, and the secrets they keep. It actually ties back to what Joe said about the Jedi not using the Force as effectively, but not telling anyone that. And, I mean, Obi-Wan and Anakin were constantly covering for each other in the Clone Wars and breaking all sorts of rules and getting into all sorts of trouble. And you have to wonder how much of it was specifically brought back to Yoda in, like, briefings and everything else, but ultimately, like, a lot of it was glossed over because they were successful in what they were doing for the most part. So I question a lot of the decision making during that time period. So while the shroud of the dark side has fallen, there was some bad judgment to begin with, even from Yoda, who is the wisest among us.
Do you ever wonder, though, if we're always playing Monday morning quarterback? Because it's hard to look at the picture when you're inside the frame.
Of course, I'd be the first one to die in any of these situations. I'd have to be like the omniscient narrator, because I'm not surviving this thriller. Like, I think I'm in a comedy and it turns out it's a horror movie. Like, I'm I'm definitely in the wrong thing.
I guess I just mean as far as like, you know, we I feel like we're very quick to throw stones at the Jedi, and I'm certainly among them as well. But it's also, you know, when you've got someone of that kind of power to sort of, you know, slowly, like a parasitic force user just seeping into everything and clouding everything to the point where these good people can't properly use the force, whatever that even means, by the way. You know, that I think what's I'm realizing in this conversation, which I'm very excited about, is there may be more to decipher and disseminate in Attack of the Clones than any of the pre-existing films that we've talked about so far.
There's a lot. That's
pretty cool.
Yeah. Film. It's not my favorite, but I think to discuss, it's in my top three. Because what's to discuss in Return of the Jedi? It's very simple. Anakin gets it's a fun movie. It's still my favorite. And when I came on your podcast the first time, I said it was my favorite movie. It still is.
I remember.
I can't do a 2-hour lecture on the ups and downs of Return of the Jedi. Like, there's Attack of the Clones. Yes, I can.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Wow. Let's do a Patreon. We'll set up a Patreon page where we can talk about this and people can pay to listen to us.
No one's going to pay to listen to me.
I would.
Yeah, sign me up.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you guys have any honorable mentions?
I have one quick one, and it's out of universe. We'll call it behind the scenes. Daniel Logan, who I just love, love, love. He is such a good guy. I got to spend a lot of time with him when he was doing a couple of different convention appearances and at Star Wars Celebration last year. He's just the coolest. And if you ever have a chance to go see him at a show, maybe Celebration 19, we don't know. We haven't announced anyone yet, but he was there last year. Do yourself a favor and meet Daniel Logan. He's like the nicest person you'll ever meet. He's a lot of fun. He's just good people. So I can't say enough good things about Daniel.
I can't argue with that. Joe, do you have any honorable mentions?
Oh my gosh, where do I start? Let's just say the entire city of Coruscant and the tour we get of it at the beginning of the movie, it's pretty cool to actually finally see more than just like a landing platform or one or two buildings, and you really got a good sense of the depth and the height and the scope of just a few districts of the city planet. And I thought it was just such a cool way to do it through a chase. And I love how you go through the different zones of the planet as well, from the business to the industrial to the entertainment. And it's something that you don't see a lot of anymore in movies.
I love it. Do you have any more?
I was going to say outside of I could go on. Yeah,
yeah. I only have two really.
Yeah. The second one I would say is the clones themselves. I think that it was nothing that I expected when I heard of the Clone Wars when I was a kid, and even the idea of attacking clones. I didn't realize or think that we were going to be getting clones of a Mandalorian. I figured that when I was a kid, I thought that the clones would be maybe the clones of specific people, and like Kenobi fighting Kenobi or something crazy like that. And the scope of what the clones turned out to be, which was a predecessor to the Stormtrooper army, it was mind-blowing. And the end of that movie was the down note of all down notes. When you see that entire army and you know they're going off to war, and you know this is an ending. This is an ending anytime soon. They're just all going to morph into Stormtroopers.
Yep, it's us being the omniscient narrator or whatever again, seeing what everyone else can't see. It's such a downer, which is why this movie, in that regard, really holds up. It's so infuriating and sad.
and you also can't help but smile because of the strains of the Imperial March, triumphantly, yeah. Bombastically playing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Any other honorable mentions? Those are good.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I could go on.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bounty Hunter is in this movie between
Sam Wessel.
Sam Wessel and Jango Fett. I mean, it's such a cool, just cool characters. I loved Sam Wessel quite a bit. The idea of a changeling in Star Wars was, you know, very, you know, out there sci-fi. You didn't see in the original trilogy at all. And, you know, that entire first sequence of trying to, you know, assassinate Padme was done just really, it drew you into this mystery. And the opening firing shot, it's like a Dash Gamut novel, were just really, really compelling. I think I'll end with that.
Good. I love it. Well, I only have two honorable mentions. The first one is the much you guys just talked about, the end sequence with the March of the Clones on Coruscant. I like the ominous nature. Again, the dramatic Shakespearean irony of this moment. Palpatine on his ivory tower, basking in what he is creating and how he's able to basically create two armies to wipe each other out, and he just picks up the pieces. He's the ultimate evil, really is. My other one, this is a bit more selfish, so I apologize in advance, but in Ian Desher's, Ian Desher is, of course, the guy who's written the Shakespeare Star Wars books, which I absolutely love. I actually helped Ian write the prequels to these, and in The Clone Army Attacketh, on page 116, he did something really wonderful that I could never possibly pay him for. It's the sequence where Obi-Wan is talking to Dooku, which we talked about earlier in this podcast, and Dooku is trying to basically recruit him a bit haphazardly, because I don't think, in my opinion, that he thinks Obi-Wan's going to fall for it. But an acrostic is when you take the first letter of each line of a poem, and it spells its own word or its own phrase. And he wrote on page 116 an acrostic which reads from the from line 55 all the way down to line, let's see, 66, I trust Zare. And I have always been so flattered and humbled by that, and it just makes me really smile.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank That's you. Really cool. Thank you so much. In fact, he autographed it for me at Celebration on that page. And honestly, I didn't even remember which page it was until I saw his autograph. So it's pretty neat. So it was fun to show that to my family. So that is fantastic. But the awesomeness does not stop there, because Mark has some really, really cool things from Tops that I would love, Mark, if you don't mind sharing with our Coffee with Kenobi audience. There's a lot of great stuff from Tops coming up very soon.
Oh, yeah, there's always a ton going on. Now, first, if everyone loved the discussion on Attack of the Clones, if you visit StarWarsAuthentics.com, that's our photo and memorabilia business. It's a Topps partnership with Major League Baseball. We've got over 100 official photos from Attack of the Clones. You can relive some of those big scenes, find some cool photos of Anakin and Padme and Count Dooku and everyone else. We also have autographs from some of the cast members, including Hayden Christensen and Tamora Morrison. And we have an amazing dual autograph from Tamora and Daniel Logan, which is one of my favorites. So we've got a cool selection up there on the website. We also have some really cool trading card products coming out later this year. Star Wars Galaxy is making its return after a long absence. If you're not familiar with Galaxy, this is original artwork done by artists that we commissioned to create new, we'll call them paintings, shrunk down onto trading cards. So we haven't done Galaxy in something like 10 years. And with, you know, the new Disney acquisition of Lucasfilm, it's been a little bit different getting that rolling. But now we have all this new content, so that'll be coming out later this year. We also have a high-end set called Star Wars Stellar Signatures coming out later this year. And that includes autographs with Samuel L. Jackson. Only the second time he's ever signed for us. So that's fantastic. And of course, like, he basically ruled those prequels. And I still wonder if he's alive. I don't know what your thoughts are on Mace Windu still being out there, but
oh no, no, he's not. He's not alive.
All right. There's some chatter maybe, but I also think too, like, certain Jedi will get them in other ways. Like, I actually kind of hope that Mace Windu didn't survive that, because death should sort of be permanent. You know, but Sam Jackson's in that set, which is exciting, as is Hayden Christensen and a bunch of other big signers from across the saga, like Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver and a few others. And then the biggest exciting stuff, and based on the timing of this show, I don't know exactly when we go live, but Rhode Island Comic Con is in about a week. And Hayden Christensen will be there. Topps is bringing him. He's doing one day, Saturday, November 3rd. Let me make sure I get that right. Saturday is the 3rd, right? I'm checking my calendar right now.
I think so.
Yes, Saturday. Yep.
Yeah.
Hayden Christensen will be signing autographs and doing photo ops. You can visit the Rhode Island Comic Con website to buy your tickets. So we'll be there with him all day, which is very exciting. And then after that, there'll be some new autograph signers getting added to the Star Wars Authentic site that we can't name quite yet, but coming very soon. Maybe right after Rhode Island Comic Con.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Definitely a hint.
Awesome. That's and this is going to go live on Thursday, October 25th. So that should give people plenty of time to be sure to be a part of that Rhode Island Comic Con. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, when you are at a con and Mark is there, you have to go up and talk to him. He loves his Star Wars and he's a great person to chat with. So definitely be sure to do that. Mark, thank you so much for being on Coffee with Kenobi again.
Yeah, it's always good to see you, Dan. Good to see you too, Joe. Whenever you want to have me, let me know. I'll start preparing my slides for the Attack of the Clones 2-hour lecture.
I love it. I love it. I will sit in the front row. And Joe, speaking of a pleasure, it's so awesome to chat with you. My only regret is that I can't talk with you more, but you know, life gets busy in the way. So we will be sure to save a warm cup of coffee for you anytime, sir. Where can people find you and all of your wonderful contributions to Star Wars?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen. It really is always a pleasure. We have to make sure to do this more often. A new baby sort of took up a lot of my time in 2018, but I think
it's things
that we'll have to schedule some more. But you know, you can find me at retrozap.com, where me and my band of cohorts are producing podcasts and publishing daily, and it's a lot of fun over there. And you can also listen to me weekly on Brews and Blasters, which is a Star Wars podcast. You know, I like to call it similar to Coffee with Kenobi. The only difference is, you know, what's in the cup. I'll also at Rhode Island Comic Con. You know, and you can find me and my co-host on Brews, Chris Dalton, and my friend Bill Drunowski will all be there. And we'll be, you know, hanging out on the floor, and I can't wait to meet Hayden Christensen for the second time. And Mark, I can't wait to see you again. Every year we hang out at Rhode Island Comic Con. It's always a blast.
I love that show. It's one of my favorites. That's why I recommended we bring Hayden to the show. Like, I'm the one who picked this one. And I'm so excited to see you and the rest of the crew. It is like our annual checkup. Which that's what I love about this fandom is there are people I saw in San Diego who I hadn't seen in a year. And the last time I'd seen them was San Diego. New York Comic Con is sort of the same thing. But I'm always on the road. And if you're looking where I am, I'm on Twitter at Darth Von Olin. If you guys are going to any conventions or know of any good ones that you think would be fun to attend, let me know. I love meeting all the fans and everyone else who contributes to Star Wars like this. This is the positivity in the fandom that I love.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's so great to have both of you on the show. Let's go ahead and take our last break. When we come back, we will close out the show. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, One Nation Coffee, Harry's Razors, and Mouse Fan Travel. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Also, be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well, and be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own feeds now. That is going to do it for Coffee with Kenobi show number 148. Thanks again to Joe Tavano and Mark Von Olin for joining us and talking about the top five things we love about Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Of course, you know what that means. It looks like next week we'll be talking about Revenge of the Sith. For many people, their favorite of the prequels, we are going to have a lot of fun with that one. I also want to thank Tom Gross for joining me and talking to me and asking me questions about the Rancho Obi-Wan trip that I did this year for the Rancho Obi-Wan Gala. Such a wonderful time. Thanks again to Steve Sansweet and Newman and everyone at Rancho Obi-Wan for making such an awesome experience even more wonderful each and every year. In addition to the places I just mentioned for Coffee with Kenobi, you can find me monthly. No, I'm sorry. You can find me twice a month. I still can't get used to that. It's so cool. I get to be on the podcast looking at Lucasfilm with Jim Hill and a part of the Jim Hill Media Network, as well as you can find me also on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, M-R-Z-E-H-R. And you can find my writings on CWK's website, as well as StarWars.com and IGN, where I contribute articles on Star Wars, as well as some other topics. Thank you again for joining us, and don't forget to check out www.patreon.com/coffeewithkenobi to help support the show, as well as get access to podcasts not heard anywhere else. And this weekend, as I said, we've got our big Halloween episode. Tons of fun and laughs there. Be sure to check it out. There are also t-shirts, coffee mugs, and so much more. Have a great week, everybody, and I will see you next time. This is a podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.